Environmental impact statements are often in the news, such as recently in the standoff over the Dakota Access Pipeline. Most often, they're required before permitting of major infrastructure, but projects can also be exempted or the process slimmed down. You're listening to KNKX, and we have some questions about environmental impact statements, like where do they come from and what good are they? 88.5 Environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe explores these questions in the latest installment of our series, Unpacking Government.
Environmental impact statements come from a raft of federal laws that were passed in the late 1960s and early 70s. A growing conservation movement was highlighting high-profile environmental crises. News reports of the time warned of industrial pollution so conspicuous, it's almost hard to imagine today.
The Cuyahoga River in Ohio is so loaded with the waste products of petroleum distillation that it is actually in danger of catching fire.
In 1969, the Cuyahoga famously did catch fire. At the end of that same year, the first of those major laws sailed through Congress, the sweeping National Environmental Policy Act. It was authored and shepherded through the process by a prominent Democrat, Washington State's very own Senator Henry M. Jackson, and signed into law by Republican President Richard Nixon.
And it was a nonpartisan thing. This was a way that a Republican administration saw of serving constituents of all stripes, right? Everybody wants clean water.
Ryan Kelly is an assistant professor at the University of Washington School of Marine and Environmental Affairs. He says the National Environmental Policy Act gave rise to similar laws on the state level all over the country. 16 states, including Washington, now have them.
And these are laws that essentially say, stop and think when you're going to build a big project.
Specifically, government agencies have to consider whether there could be significant environmental impacts. If so, detailed analysis is required, not just of the project itself, but also of a set of reasonable alternatives. That's what an environmental impact statement is. It can be thousands of pages long, and the public has to be involved. But Kelly says the funny thing is, ultimately, the law doesn't require any particular outcome.
It doesn't require you pick the alternative that's the most environmentally friendly or the least damaging. What it requires is that you put the options out on the table and you weigh them in a public way.
So environmental impact statements are more than anything about transparency. In lawyer speak, it's not a substantive law, it's procedural. It's a process with no teeth. That's been codified in federal law by a case that unfolded right here in the Mettow Valley. In 1973, developers proposed a huge new downhill ski area. Eventually known as Early Winters, the resort would be located at the base of a mountain in the Okanagan National Forest. The U.S. Forest Service prepared a 150-page environmental impact statement and gave the go-ahead. Environmental groups appealed.
And the major objections included, among other things, the impacts on the mule deer herd.
Environmental law professor Bill Rogers is also at the UW. The area around Early Winters was important migration habitat for tens of thousands of deer. In 1989, the case made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Rogers calls what came of that decision the kill all the deer dictum.
The Supreme Court says, well, if they've done their studies and said we've looked at it, doesn't matter if you kill a few, many, or all of the mule deer, because this is just a procedural statute.
As it turned out, for economic reasons, the resort was never built. But the problem Rogers has with the court's interpretation is that it cheapens the intention of the law. He says it means that no mitigation or remedies are required under the National Environmental Policy Act.
It's designed to prevent severe and enduring damage to the environment, but it's become largely a paper-pushing exercise.
Some lawyers disagree that the law isn't working. Kristen Boyles is with the public interest law firm Earth Justice.
The point of going through all that process, you're not just doing it to do it, you're doing it to get the information. What are the impacts of an oil export terminal on our coasts? What would be the risks of a spill or air pollution or any sort of train accident?
She says once that information comes out, most of the time, better decisions are made. Case in point, she recently represented citizens groups in Anacortes who were demanding that the Shell oil refinery couldn't sidestep a full environmental review when it wanted to add an oil train facility. county agreed, and a draft environmental impact statement came out.
And a week later, Shell pulled its permit and said it wasn't going forward from the project. There was nothing magical about that timing when Shell looks at itself, the problems and harms and hoops and hurdles that are going to be for building this kind of facility. They themselves decided it wasn't worth pursuing.
Shell says it was for economic reasons, not because of the review. But there's another oil refinery nearby that does have a crude by rail loop. The county exempted Tesoro from a full environmental review.
Public didn't know about it. There was no controversy. They're operating. That's what happens when you don't get public attention to issues.
Boyle says even if the process might seem bureaucratic, without it, all kinds of things could be happening secretly.
Which is why this is so important to have these laws that lets the public know what's going on in their backyard.
The projects covered are major, things that are going to be on the landscape for decades to come, like a new stadium or ski resort or pipeline. Environmental impact statements allow the public to be in on the process before it's a done deal. Bellamy Palethorpe, 88.5 News.